So then, May, what you were just saying is that you're trying to establish that he could have had access to information classified of a nature greater than classified, or confidential, rather.
Oh, yes.
So to establish the fact that he could have been an agent working with matters that might have been secret or top secret.
Commensurate with his duties, he could have access to anything that pertained to his duties. And that security clearance was never taken away. Yes.
So is anybody ever... Well, you've read what his training was. What were his duties?
Well,
are you going to get into that today?
Yeah, what I'm going to do is read you... this is dated December the 4th, 1963. And it's an FBI report done by Agent James Morrissey, turned into the Warren Commission, an interview with John Donovan. John Donovan was a physics instructor, he is, at Ascension Academy in Alexandria, Virginia. And he was the U.S. Marine Corps officer, section commander Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, I'm going to read some of this because I want people to understand these documents, how they read, and what Mr. Donovan is saying. Because if you understand Oswald's officer, you can appreciate more who Lee Harvey Oswald was, because this man would know, right, Phil? So John Donovan is the physics instructor at Ascension Academy in Alexandria, Virginia. He was the officer, section commander of Lee Harvey Oswald during the period from March to September of 1959, and both were attached to the Counter Air Operations Center with Marine Air Control Squadron, Santa Ana, California. Oswald was a private, and Donovan was the assistant operations officer. He described Oswald as a wise guy. He went out of his way to annoy people. He felt Oswald was one of a minority who actually knew what was happening in the world affairs, particularly in the field of politics. He was officer-baiting troublemaker because he used his superior knowledge of world political situations to trap and weary officers. Now, we're not saying Oswald's personality was... he's going to win any awards, you know, for personality. He did bother them, but Donovan respected Oswald's intelligence. Donovan said Oswald was dependable on watch during his performance of duties with the crew, such as radar scanning operations. He believed Oswald's position would be classified as operations man in an MACS unit. Donovan's association with Oswald was on a daily basis while they were assigned to the West Coast. Donovan mentioned in slack periods that Oswald rarely associated with members of the crew, but he spent his time reading history books, magazines, Russian newspapers, and studied the Russian language. Now, this is while he has these security clearances in radar. The Marines is letting him off with records or books to study the Russian language, which shows a certain discipline. He isolates himself from the group and is studying the Russian language. Donovan said that although Oswald was an officer baiter, he was never directly insulting. He never knew of any trouble in his association with Oswald that required administrative action. And he said that some of the men actually liked and respected Oswald because he was able to back up some of his officer baiting accomplishments with studied knowledge of facts, political problems, and historical questions. Donovan believed Oswald had a very high IQ, was a self-educated man, well-read, particularly in political world affairs. And he said that Oswald presented the anomaly of a 20-year-old Marine Corps private with an extensive knowledge and maturing interest in world affairs and politics. Donovan related that Oswald's position with the crew gave him access to all secret radio frequencies, call signs, authentication codes utilized in connection with the normal functions of the CAOC, and since they were compromised, they were changed at the time of Oswald's defection to Moscow in connection also with normal, effective operational functioning. And when Oswald went to the Soviet Union, the normal functioning of the Marine Corps was to change the codes. But in order to endear himself to the Soviet Union, he said, I am going to give you all this information and hope that they would allow him to get into the Soviet Union. This is my interpretation. This isn't in the document. Now, going back to the document, he said he knew that Oswald knew the displacement of most military squadrons of all the services on the West Coast, the number and type of aircraft of all services on the West Coast, the ranges and locations of radar control sites of all services on the West Coast, and he knew the practical effective ranges as distinguished from theoretical or book ranges on all radar sites in the U.S. Marine Corps. I'm reading this because this isn't the image you have of Lee Harvey Oswald walking down the street or a fellow who goes to Navy postgraduate school. He doesn't have access to half of the stuff that Oswald had. In the Marine Corps, technical information. He said that Oswald's position required a secret clearance, that access to the location in which they operated was gained by presentation of appropriate credentials to the guard on duty. Now, they mentioned that Donovan says the following people knew Oswald well. This is an FBI report dated December 1963. They mention Robert Block of the Marine Corps, Camillus Brown, Eugene Holmberg, William Trail, Owen Dejanovich, and these men served with Lee Harvey Oswald in this group in radar training. I'm someday going to write a book. It's called Witnesses Not Called, Phil, and it's about hundreds of people that should have been called as a witness before the Warren Commission that weren't allowed to be called. You see, the men who trained with Oswald, if you knew what they were trained in, you would know what Oswald is trained in.
Were these people called?
Never. Not one of these people was called as a witness before the Warren Commission.
Even though Donovan identifies them as people who knew Oswald well.
Who had clearances, who worked in his division. This is the officer teaching physics now who handled Oswald's technical training, and his testimony before the Warren Commission is fantastic. He said Oswald was brilliant. He had the equivalent of an officer rating. And Donovan gives a glowing report of Lee Harvey Oswald, which the Warren report does not use. You see, they use a man to describe Lee Harvey Oswald's personality quirks in the Marines by the name of Thornley. And Thornley, when they testify, when he's called before the commission, they say, did you serve with him in a platoon? No. Did you work with him in any area? No. Were you in any specified area? No. Did you live with him? No. But I used to pass him going from the mess hall to my sleeping quarters. And Thornley wrote a book on Lee Harvey Oswald in the Marines. And under examination by the Warren Commission, he hardly knew the man.
And yet, these people are identified as ones that know him, and they weren't called.
Never called. And by December the 4th, this is right after the assassination, the commission could easily have called the men who had the technical training with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Is there any explanation in the Warren Commission report as to why certain witnesses aren't called or why these witnesses weren't called?
Well, the selection of the witnesses is a direct interpretation of how you're going to write your history. The Warren report is purely fictitious. It's made up of people who had no access to the information or facts, and everything they say is a hypothetical and a lie.
Have you ever been able to get a hold of any of those men that are identified in that FBI report?
Well, I've spent so many years just until I completed my final research on Lee Harvey Oswald, the agent, and now I have the backbone for five books, and I have never reached any of these people directly. I probably could put somebody on their tail and try to find them.
Be interesting to.
I think when I do my book, Witnesses Not Called, maybe the news media or other researchers then will find these people and follow them up. It would be interesting to know why the Warren Commission didn't use any of the men that served with Lee Harvey Oswald in technical training, but used a man who didn't even live with him as their witness against Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, on page 22 of the commission hearings, volume 22, page 180, is an account of Lee Harvey Oswald's bank account while he was in the Marines at El Toro base, and this is in Santa Ana, and this is shortly before he's to go to the Soviet Union. On December the 8th, in 1958, he deposited $200 into his account in the Marines, while he was in the Marines. September the 14th, 1959, he withdrew $203. He kept that balance at El Toro very close through the years. Maybe there's some interest taken in, a little bit taken out. But when he left for the Soviet Union, 3 days later, he had $1,600 cash. Now, he had no checking account, and he kept a savings account. A witness who was on duty at El Toro base describes how at night Lee Harvey Oswald was relieved from duty while a plainclothes man would meet with Lee Harvey Oswald, and he was getting trained or prepared. This is another witness not called who was meeting Lee Harvey Oswald while he was in the service just prior to going to the Soviet Union. But it seems to me that a man that can accrue $1,600 in cash would have had that bank account building up like $200, $300, $400, as long as he has a savings account. It would be interesting to know why he doesn't have 500 or 600 or 700 or 800, because it'd be easy to be ripped off if you're saving this money for anything as important as going to the Soviet Union, and you're spending all your free time learning this Russian and this language, and you're going to go there and have the money taken from you. But the whole point is that while he was in the service, Lee Harvey Oswald applied for a passport to the Soviet Union with a security clearance. While he was in the service, he learned his Russian. While he was in the service, he maintained this account. But in the interim, he had this wad of cash that wasn't being put. He was off all the time on weekends, and he was not letting this cash accumulate in his savings account, but he did have an account.
Now, you say that on the day that he flew to Texas, he withdrew $203, and he opened the account with a cash deposit of $200. Between those dates, has anybody seen the balance? Did it fluctuate up and down? Or
no, there's a copy of it in volume 23, page 180, and it has this fluctuation of, like, he deposited 200 and he withdrew 203, but then that's the sum total of his banking account down in El Toro, but then he leaves with 1600 cash from Santa
Ana. And nobody knows
Anna.
Where the 1600 came from.
No, if the Warren Commission said he saved it from his earnings in the Marines, it would be interesting to know why he puts it under his pillow or takes that risk when he has a savings account.
No evidence of any other accounts.
No. Why would he open that account? Now, on volume 19, page 680, there is a copy of a paper which Lee Harvey Oswald signed when he left the Marines on the 11th of September, 1959. Lee Harvey Oswald was separated from the Marine Corps, and he had to sign a paper with his signature called Security Termination Statement. You know what that is? When you were active in the service, did you have to sign, or did you have security clearance? It's Navy Form 5511-14. Headquarters and Headquarters Squadron of the U.S. Marine Corps Air Station, El Toro, California. He signed, number one, that he did certify that he conformed to the directives of the Navy Security Manual for Classified Material, and he returned to the Navy establishment all classified matter in his possession. If he took it with him to the Soviet Union, he'd be in jail today. He turned back everything. Number two, he said he had not retained or taken with him any documents that would, or information affecting the national defense or other matters of classified, top secret, secret, confidential, to which he had obtained access during his employment. And third, he said, I shall not hereafter in any manner reveal or divulge to any person information affecting the national defense, classification, top secret, secret, or confidential, or which I have gained knowledge when authorized by officials of the naval establishment. Lee Harvey Oswald, he signed, I have been informed and am aware of the severe penalty for unlawfully divulging information affecting the national defense, and I certify that I have read and understood appendices B, D, E, F, H, F, and H of the Navy Security Manual for Classified Matter. He wrote his name to the fact that the reserve and retired personnel on inactive duty can be recalled to duty for trial by court-martial for unlawful disclosure of information that he has been informed about. He said, I am aware that the making of a willfully false statement herein renders me subject to trial. Signed, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Okay, so he signed it. The fact that he signs it, does that mean anything?
No, but the point is that he went to the Soviet Union and he said, I'm turning over all of the radar material and the classified material that I had while I was in the Marines.
He said that?
Yes, on the air in the Soviet Union. When he defected, he announced publicly, in the Soviet Union, USSR, I am turning over radar information that I had access to the Marines. And on the basis of that, Officer Donovan said they reclassified the whole Pacific Coast code system of the Marines because Oswald said that in Russia.
He said that on the radio there?
In the Soviet Union, yes. Now, when Lee Harvey Oswald wants to come home from the Soviet Union, he sends a letter to San Antonio, Texas. And San Antonio, Texas, incidentally, is the headquarters for his intelligence operation under, I'll give you the division in a little while of what that office does for Lee Harvey Oswald. But he sent a letter, February the 28th, 1961, to the American Embassy in Moscow. He said the petitioner, Lee Harvey Oswald, has requested to the return of his passport and indicates he desires to return to the United States, providing no legal proceedings would be instituted against him upon his return. Now, when he's ready to return after serving his time in the Soviet Union, the very first letter he sends is that there'd be no legal proceeding. Now, he signed a document that he's subject to these court-martials if he returns. So the very first letter that Lee Harvey Oswald sends, he stated at the time that although he originally declared at the embassy in October 1959 that he was willingly make available to the Soviet Union information he acquired as a radar operator in the United States Marine Corps, he had actually never been questioned by the Soviet authorities. Now, this is what the letter said. This is volume 22, page 16. He writes to the embassy in Moscow. They send it to San Antonio, Texas. He is coming home, and he's not to be held upon his return for anything that he did.
To whom in San Antonio is this letter addressed to?
Well, I'll show you. That's in volume 23, page 16, that a letter was sent in San Antonio, Texas. I have this here among some documents I brought in. We'll find that in a second. The agency in San Antonio that he worked with as an intelligence agent. I hope you people out there are appreciating how many years of research it takes to go in through this, the documentation here. The information that I have from the Southwest with Lee was paid through a subterfuge account with the Department of Immigration and Naturalization, Division of Justice of the Department of FBI. And it went, Byron Phillips was the man in San Antonio that signed all the papers for Lee and Marina to return back from the United States. Oswald's pay slip and his number revealed by the Dallas Sheriff's Office, his FBI number, was assigned to him from the San Antonio office. Oswald paid at the Dallas Immigration Department. He gave their address in the Rio Grande building. Oswald's notebook, you see, had the Rio Grande building of the San Antonio office of the Department of Immigration and Naturalization. This is a long web, and you know, when we're talking about intelligence systems, it's very difficult to pinpoint that this man was an agent and received this assignment and this salary, because everything is hidden. You know how the intelligence system works, and it's only by looking in Lee Harvey Oswald's notebook, you know, what is this address, that a person, another research, looks that up. That's not in the Warren Report. The addresses and phone numbers or the offices are not in the Warren Report at all.
So you're saying, May, that when he was in the Soviet Union and he wanted to come back, and he wanted to come back without any legal action taken against him, that he wrote this letter,
yes,
to this address to the Department of Immigration,
and said, I will come home providing no legal proceedings would come home. Why is he saying providing? They must be telling him to come home now. And he says, I will come home providing. He's giving the terms of his coming home.
So he comes home.
Yeah.
No legal action taken against him.
Well, no legal action is taken against him. That he has a correspondence going with Dean Rusk, and he writes a letter to John Tower in Texas. The State Department gave him the money to come home. No, we did one show a while back, not too long ago, I was going into the psychological personality of Lee Harvey Oswald as against what the Warren Commission said. And the Warren Commission said he was rejected by the USSR and the United States. And I made the point that when he wanted to come home, he just said, give me the passport, give me the money. And they put him in a very fine hotel in Moscow until the papers came and took him on a train, you know, to Belgium. And then he got a boat and came to the United States. And he was met at the port in New York and taken a limousine to the hotel, and then taken back by a limousine to the airport to fly to Texas. Oswald had red carpet treatment all the way. And the very first man he meets when he gets to Fort Worth, Texas, is a man in our intelligence system that he contacts. Now, Oswald had there was no rejection of the United States towards Lee Harvey Oswald, and he sets the conditions of when I come home. I will come home, he says, providing there's no legal proceedings instituted against me.
So you're asserting that this contact was another in the intelligence network that he was a part of?
Of course. He's no fool. You see, if he blows his cover, like if he says, I'm an agent, if he says in the Soviet Union, I don't like the United States and I'm going to give over the radar information, if he was really a defector, I think he'd be put in the clink when he got back. For doing that, for having access to what he had and signing a document that he's subject to prosecution, and he knows he signed the document, the very first letter he sends home is, I'll come, providing no legal conditions are set, and the United States government guarantees Lee Harvey Oswald that they won't do anything, and they didn't.
Where did they guarantee that?
They guaranteed that because when he sent the condition, they returned him money to come home, and they never prosecuted him. That's reason enough. They could just tear up that letter and say, the hell with it. Who are you? You want to live in Russia? Live in Russia. But when he wanted his little Russian wife to come back, and there was a waiver, whether or not she could pass a test, the technicality is 243G, they gave her no tests or questions at all. They said, it's in the best interest of the United States. Let him come home. They gave him everything he wanted and the transportation home. Now, you can tell me by his handwriting, Mr. Duffy, he had no accomplices. I can't believe in a letter that he writes to John Connally that you can tell me Lee Harvey Oswald didn't have help. He had technical training in the Navy. He had all the skills he needed. He was knowledgeable. He was intelligent. He was very bright. There's a picture in the Marine exhibits, in Folsom exhibits, of his grade in Russian. He was tested. He was trained to speak the language. He was given a passport while he was in the service. He had money to get to Europe. He had the know-how to get right to Helsinki, to Moscow. Now, the Folsom exhibit, exhibit 19, this is page 19, Captain Folsom has his Russian examination test, his training at Keesler Air Force Base, his Russian form, February 25th, 1959. He gets out in September. They have in the Marines his Russian form. Now, you can't tell me that you can be reading all this Russian literature, learning the Russian language, talking politics to the officers, being knowledgeable on political things, and have the Marines photograph copies of your Russian test that he was given while he was in the Marines.
Was there any reason given why he should have Russian training?
Well, no, there's just a photograph of his Russian language training. Well, there's another one under Marine Captain Fain FBI report, dated July 1962. That was before the assassination, a routine FBI report on Lee Harvey Oswald, that while he was in the Marines, he studied and mastered the Russian language. This was, the FBI began to keep files, supposedly they kept files on from the time he said he was a defector. That was supposed to be their interest in him, but we know it was deeper than that. But they commented about the fact in 62 that while in the Marines, he studied and mastered the Russian language. And in page 19, volume 19, page 662 of the commission hearings, are the forms of the Russian language that he was taught in the Allison G. Folsom exhibits.
Well, in your opinion, May, what is the purpose of the trip to Russia and his learning Russian?
Well, the purpose of the trip to Russia, as I analyze it, I also have a chronology of Oswald's relationship in the Navy and where he was stationed, all the different places he was stationed in the Philippines and in Japan. The only way, if you're in an intelligence operation, it's very difficult to pick up the exact assignment, like you're going to here and you're going to do that. But there is a man named Mr. Ofstein who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald at Jagger's Chili Stovall in the Dallas area. Oswald worked there for 6 months in photographic technique, and that's a place, a government printing office, that does maps for overseas and for the United States, for the military, and government bonds. And you need security clearances to work at Jagger's Chili Stovall in many of those areas. And Mr. Ofstein was a gentleman who worked alongside Lee Harvey Oswald in the photographic lab, and Oswald used to bring in Russian books to read. And Ofstein recognized him because he trained out here at the Presidio and learned Russian language in the service and just assumed Oswald was an intelligence agent in the Soviet Union. And he gave testimony about his working with Lee Oswald, and the dialogue went along the way that he was an agent in the Soviet Union. And he gave out so much information about tanks and trucks and data. You wouldn't think that the human mind, he was like a computer, could retain all this stuff because, it's not the image we have of Oswald. But Oswald would talk to Ofstein about vapor trails that are that he would look for in the sky in the Soviet Union. And Ofstein thought it had something to do with the U-2 flights because of Oswald's being at Atsugi Air Base in Japan and Gary Powers being there. And in the same issue of Computer and Automation from October 1971, there are locked up in the National Archives a lot of documents, and one is Lee Harvey Oswald's access to the U-2 flights. So I'm sure Gary Powers, in his book about the U-2, feels that Oswald might be instrumental with his radar training of grounding Gary Powers there. But I think that Oswald became a double agent in the Soviet Union. They knew his role. as affiliated with the United States, which they said immediately after the assassination. And in order to come out alive or be useful to Russia, you very often have to become a double agent, or you get skinned alive off to Siberia. And I feel that he could have brought down, with his technical training, brought down the U-2 in exchange for being able to leave and come back to the United States. Gary Powers thinks Oswald could have done that. Well, you know, Oswald just wasn't sweeping the decks if he had that much power.
I'm not too sure about the chronology of Oswald and the U-2 incident. Was it the same time?
Same time, yeah. Oswald was in the Soviet Union, that the U-2 was brought down, and Powers writes about it in his book, and Ofstein, who worked with Oswald, brings in the subject of his watching vapor trails and tanks and trucks and as an observer of the military in the Soviet Union.
So, well, what was the purpose in sending him there, if indeed he was sent?
Well, I'm not in the Navy or the Marines. I don't know why they wanted him there. I know how he got there. I know what he did before. You see, I know his training. I know where he was. I know his skills and his technology. And I know the Warren Commission wants you to think he was a village idiot, and he wasn't. And I know he had access to secrets. I know he had money. He had passports. He had correspondence with people in our State Department. And he was a super intelligent person. And the exact role that Lee Harvey Oswald had in the Soviet Union, that assignment, or the purpose of it, he's dead. And John Connally isn't going to tell you, you know, and neither is Richard Helms or J. Edgar Hoover. There's no way for us to know exactly the role. We have many, many agents behind the Soviet Union, behind the Iron Curtain. The minute he came home from this experience, he was in the Marine 3 years, and then he went to Russia for 2 years, and he wasn't home just a day or two when he took a lot of documents and information on trucks and tanks and troops and this kind of vapor trail thing to a stenographer, Mrs. Bates, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he would sit with her. He wouldn't leave the material there, and she would type it up. Now, he had bread for somebody to type it up, and he said it was for an engineer in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. This woman was in Fort Worth. And she assumed he was an American agent by the way the material read. She's a stenographer. As soon as he was associated with the assassination, Helen Bates came forward. She's a witness in the Warren Commission, and I have her early articles in the newspaper where she said, oh, Oswald was in my office. Well, the people that were called as witnesses, like Mrs. Bates or Ofstein, who worked with Oswald, assumed he was in American intelligence. Now, my role isn't to say what he did there. The fact that I don't know his exact assignment doesn't mean that he wasn't. I can only speculate, because knowing his training and his capacity and what he did before and after and who he saw, I know he had accomplices in his modus operandi, that he ended up in the book depository a decoy, but that he was an intelligence agent and that he was used later in this particular political assassination. Now, Donovan keeps saying that Oswald was very political, but he doesn't say how political. He could have been a very far right winger, too. He was brought up in the South, Southwest, military family. We don't know what his feelings were about Kennedy or his relationship to men like David Ferry or everyone he saw in the Dallas-Fort Worth area was very far right wing. There wasn't any liberal or left of center at all. They were oil people, and his very best friend was George de Morenschild. His name was Von Morenschild. A man who was apprehended by the FBI, we mentioned it before, during World War II for being possibly a Nazi spy, drawing installations at Corpus Christi. The FBI was following von Morenschild. That was Oswald's closest friend. On the bus going down to Mexico, he sat next to Albert Osborne, alias Bowen, who was apprehended by the FBI in 1942 for burning the American flag, for being a Nazi. Oswald's associations were with the right wing. He lived at the home of Michael and Ruth Payne. We've gone into this before, but for those who haven't heard this show, it can bear repetition. Michael Payne was a designer and is of Bell Aerospace, and his employer is Mr. Dornberger, the Nazi general that was brought over on the rocket trip. So I'm going to do some articles soon on all the Nazis that were associated with Lee Harvey Oswald. The fact that he was political in the Marines is no evidence that he was communist or left of center.
May, can you summarize the hour, if that's possible?
Well,
what's the conclusion to be drawn from the hour, if you were to try and come up with a conclusion?
Well, the main point I want to stress about this whole hour is that in a little town like Carmel of just a few thousand, our local newspaper, the Carmel Pinecone, has an article by a man of extreme intelligence and credibility, graduate of Princeton, worked with MacArthur in the Philippines, brought the Navy postgraduate school to our peninsula, a learned man, student reader, and he gets 3 pages of a local newspaper to tell you Oswald had no accomplice. And what I wanted to show today is that Mr. Duthie has been used. It's one of two things. He either is part of Navy intelligence and he's backing up the cover story, or the man is totally innocent and has been used. And maybe he'll come on the air, Phil, and do a show with me about Oswald in the Navy, a more informal thing on why a man will go in this community and give a statement that Oswald had no accomplice, when our program has been on the air 7 months. And I say that Oswald has accomplices. You think he would have some intellectual curiosity maybe to meet me and see what facts I have before he comes out with his brainwashing.
Okay, maybe we can get Mr. Duthie on the air. And that would be interesting to see what happens. That's Dialogue Assassination for today.